Welcome back to another episode of Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler. On this podcast, we explore all things related to thriving and flourishing in life. There are three fundamental truths that inform not just my podcast, but my coaching as well. And they are, number one, the future can be changed. You are not stuck and you are not trapped by your predictable future. Wherever you are right now, it's just your present state. It does not determine where you can go in life. Fundamental truth number two, you can change your future. This might be the best news of all. You don't need to be rescued by someone else. You can do that for yourself. In other words, you can be your own hero. And fundamental truth number three, you do not have to wait. Too many people think that they have to have the perfect plan or all the knowledge or all the skills before they can get started. Nothing is further from the truth. I've coached a lot of people in my career, and trust me when I say that you can learn whatever it is that you need to learn along the way. The key is to start. If you've listened to the podcast before, you'll probably know that we find stories and experts who shed light on these different areas so that we can all flourish and thrive. Let's dive in to today's episode. My guest today spent 33 months in federal prison. One of the things that he said to me when we first spoke was that there is a very real case that without prison, I would still be the emotionally broken man I had been for most of my life. Today, he is a speaker and a coach, using his inspiring story of transformation to show people how they can become the person they have always wanted to be. He has a new book coming out in spring of 2022, and it's called Within, How I Found My Authentic and Happy Self in Federal Prison. He is also an avid athlete, and his favorites include golf, tennis, skiing, and running. He loves people, great conversation, and spirited debate. He is on a mission to help people change the way they view the emotions they have about themselves. His name is Mark Moskowitz, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Mark, thank you so much for joining me on the Unyielded podcast.
Thank you, Bobby, for having me on.
Yeah, I was so glad. I think we originally connected on LinkedIn. I think Correct. Maybe you commented on something of mine, and then we started kind of talking back and forth. But to get us started, would you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Again, thank you so much for having me on Unyielded, Bobby. It's great to be here. My name is Mark Moskowitz, and I am an author. I am a public speaker and I am a coach, and I have a bit of an interesting background that does go back to my childhood, as I guess a lot of it does with most people. And I grew up in a home that seemed quite idyllic, you know, good quality parents and private schools and country clubs, and everything looked great on the outside. But there was some emotional lack in the home, and that led to feelings of low self-esteem, feelings of unworthiness. And as that manifested throughout my life, I kept making a lot of bad decisions. And that ultimately wound me up in a federal prison. And when at the age of 48, I surrendered to Otisville Prison Camp in New York. And it was absolutely transformative and life-changing for me. It was a journey that I never would have expected, but I am somewhat grateful for the experience. And right now I'm excited to be able to talk about my message, where I feel that all of our power that we have in our lives comes from within ourselves. And we have the ability to have as much success and joy and happiness that we could possibly want and fulfillment if we all just believe in ourselves and the 6 inches between our ears. If we can get that in line, we're in great shape.
Yeah. I was chuckling there when you said somewhat, right? Because it's like, I don't know if I'm completely grateful for that. Because I mean, then when you say transformative, it had to be transformative in a number of ways.
It was. And I think a misnomer in our country is that the system wants to rehabilitate you. And I think that's another message that is important to get out there. And most of the people that go into prison pretty much stay in the level that they're at when they get in there, and they don't really do the work on themselves because there's really not much work to be done. So for me, I went in with a very healthy attitude, a very positive attitude. And I think going back to my childhood, if you were to ask my family growing up, they would have always said that I was a searcher. I was always searching for something. I always felt there was something missing inside of me. I practiced Buddhism for a while, and I got deep into Eastern philosophy. And I always just felt like, here's this pretty good guy, but never quite feeling comfortable in my own skin. So I had a lot of personal development education. I was right in the 90s when Tony Robbins and Jim Rohn and all these guys were getting popular. I was right in with all the courses and all the books. So I had this real base of education and information, but I never really knew how to implement it. And because my self-esteem, my self-worth was unhealthy and didn't feel that I was worthy of having that success, I would usually stop the progress as I was getting to that point of success. So that's where I think that all of this work that we do, getting that self-esteem, self-image, self-worth, self-confidence, all in line with what you're looking to achieve in life is paramount to making those achievements happen.
Yeah, I agree. And when you say like the low self-esteem, the low self-worth, it sounds like almost like self-sabotage, like right on the cusp of success. I mean, and that's a common thing people do. How did those things trip you up?
Decisions that I made were just not good decisions from someone who is thoughtful and intelligent and has the ability to look a few steps ahead. You know, I didn't live Mark Moskowitz's life. I led my parents' life and I led other people's lives trying to get them to like a version of me that was not authentic. So, you know, my father worked on Wall Street and he was a golfer. So what did I do? I went to go work on Wall Street and I became a very good golfer. I even was a pro golfer for 1 year after college. So, and then when it came time to choose a spouse, I chose someone who was distant and aloof to try to heal those relationships. And, you know, Bobby, that just doesn't work. And, you know, I'm in the single world now, so I meet a lot of people and I feel like a lot of people have done that. You know, they've all tried to heal those relationships with their parents in an unhealthy way. So all of that low self-esteem and low self-image, you know, I had moments in my life, good moments, where I was successful and in most measures of the word. And I think a lot of it was, as I said earlier, similar to my family growing up, where on the outside, everything looked great. But on the inside, I was just a firestorm of a mess, you know?
Yeah.
And eventually, it's going to manifest into something horrible. It's going to blow up, you know? So for me, I remember like my late 30s, early 40s, life was really good. I had three children. Everything was going well. Career was good. But it was like too good. And my mind didn't want to believe it, right? Mm. So here I am. Okay, wait, I'm not supposed to be there. I'm supposed to be back down a little bit. I'm supposed to be down a few rungs. So let me do this and let me start that business venture that doesn't work. And let me go into that, you know, relationship or whatever. And eventually it just all spiraled out of control. And about 6-7 years later, I had committed the crime that I committed as I was managing a hedge fund. And I used some of the money for my own personal gain. And that's what ended up landing me in federal prison.
Yeah. I mean, and I know you, was it how much time, 3 years that you spent in
federal? Well, so I was sentenced to 33 months.
Oh, 33
but
months.
In the federal system, you serve 85% of that. So I served 24 months in the actual prison itself, and then I served 4 months on home confinement.
Yeah. Now, and earlier you said, Mark, that it was transformative. And you also said that a lot of people don't do the work when they go in. And it sounded like the personal work in order to change. Yes. What was some of that personal work for you? What was that like?
You know, it's a great question. And I have to say, like, I really credit the fact that I was into personal development in the 90s and the early 2000s, because at least I had something to fall back on.
Yeah. You know,
I came in there and I really expected there to be all of this rehabilitation and all of this therapy. And after a few weeks, when I realized that wasn't the case, it was quite depressing. So here I am, you know, alone around 120 other men, but all alone, not knowing what to do. And I had my mom send me some books in, some of my old books on, you know, from Tony and the other people that I mentioned. And the one thing which really struck me was gratitude. Mm. And I said, you know what? Let me start at the simplest place of gratitude and see where that takes me. Otisville is situated in the Catskills, and we're actually on top of a mountain, and it's quite pretty, you know, pine trees. And if you don't look at the buildings, it's quite pretty, right? So I would take these walks every day, which I deemed gratitude walks. And I would just walk around the camp for an hour and I would say whatever I could be grateful for. And it took me like 2 months, but I really actually started to feel grateful. Like I went from someone who was trying to focus on gratitude to actually being gratitude. Like I became that thing. And it took a long time. And in that, you know, a lot of people say, well, how long does it take to build the habit? And I think there's no answer. There's no right answer to that question. It depends on your motivation. It depends on what the habit is you're trying to build. You know, for me, I was not in a place to be grateful. I was in the worst spot I could ever have imagined in my life. And so I would say things that I could be grateful for that my mind would believe, like I'm grateful for fresh air. You know, we don't really say that too often, but my mind could at least believe that. Like if I said, I'm grateful that I don't have a relationship with my family, my mind is not going to believe that. I'm grateful for the blood flowing through my body and for that fact that I actually have a bed and a meal. Like what might seem like mundane things, but it was at least getting me in the right frame of mind. So it started with gratitude, and that morphed into and I was doing a lot of reading of books. That was really the only thing you could get to do. And I stumbled upon Nathaniel Brandon's famous book called The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. And it really shook me into what self-esteem was. And it really got me understanding that, hey, you know what? I think I understand what I've been lacking in my life. And that was very cathartic. That was a big deal. That was about 6 months into my incarceration time. So, you know, once I learned about that, it really felt like a big weight was lifted off of my shoulders.
Yeah. What in that book, what was it that really, I don't know, resonated so much?
The concept of authenticity and the concept of really being yourself. And we talk about it a lot. These are not new concepts. I mean, this book was written in the early 90s, I think, or late 80s. So these are not new concepts. But for me, it was like mind blowing. it's like, you know, oh, wow. Hey, you know what? I was never really my authentic self. I was always trying to please other people with my actions. I was always afraid to lift the veil of who Mark Moskowitz was. And it was all of that. You know, and then I actually stumbled upon a second book by an author very lesser known, a book called Real Power by David Lieberman. And that book really also hit me in the eyes with self-esteem, with responsibility, with the concept of owning your own power. Mm-hmm. You know, and that, you know, people with low self-esteem, we're blamers. We blame everybody because we have to protect our ego. Our ego is like, you know, we love ourselves. We couldn't possibly be the cause of our own demise. It's got to be my mom or my dad or my ex-wife or the mailman who delivers the mail. Like it's got to be anybody but me, you know? So these two books together really got me understanding this concept. And then I took responsibility to a whole nother level. Like, cause you know, in prison, you know, you have to work every day where I was, you work Monday through Friday in the warehouse there. I worked in the warehouse, but the rest of the day is really your own. You can kind of do what you want to do. So you work out, you do gratitude walks, you know, do whatever you can to pass the time. So you do a lot of thinking, a lot of meditating. And I was like, you know, what if I took this own your own power thing to like the next level, to like 10th power type of stuff, right? Where like, and after thinking about that and meditating on it, actually came to a place of what I call absolution for my parents and for everybody else. Like it's not forgiveness. It's because forgiveness almost is like, well, you did something wrong, so I forgive you. Absolution is like, they never did anything wrong. I came to this realization. You get ready for this one, Bobby. I came to the realization they just did the best they could.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to screw me up. They didn't have me as a third child because, oh, let's really screw this guy up and send him to prison. No, they did the best they could. And that was just so, again, it was just so uplifting for me. And then to know... Like when you start to feel these things after 48, 49 years of not feeling this stuff, it's just this rush of energy and you're happy to take the responsibility. You're happy. Like no one could control my actions. It's so important. It's so like it, any sort of self-growth, self-personal development. It's so important to know that I cannot control your actions, Bobby. I can push you. I can prod you. I can make you try to do something, but ultimately it's up to you to make the decision. And that's whether that's bettering your life or making your life worse, we all own our own power.
Yep. And I think that you are alluding to something really important when you say, because I'm a huge believer in owning your own power. It's something I've been talking about since like, I don't know, 2002, 2001. I used to give speeches on it. And it's something I believe as a personal philosophy. And what goes hand in hand with that is responsibility. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the only way that they come together.
And when I talk to people and I'm helping them and I just keep saying, get it out of your system that you think anybody else has control over you.
Yeah.
Because the more you think that, the harder your life is going to be. Being responsible for your own actions, it is the path to happiness. Oh, I know what it was. So, you know, we think that the easy path is the right way, that we want the easy path, but it's really, it's the hard path that gets you on the right journey. And if you see a lot of my posts, that's what a lot of them are about. You know, don't run from the hard path. You know, I'm training for a marathon right now. You know, in the marathon training, you have no choice but to do the training every day. It's hard. I ran 17 miles on Saturday. You know, it's a long mileage, but you have to do it. So don't take the easy path. Take the hard path. Be responsible for your own actions.
Yeah. There's not that many good things we find along the easy path.
No.
You know, I mean, and I'm not saying that everything has to be hard or difficult, but I don't know. There's a lot of development that happens as we're, you know, as we're on those challenges.
I'll tell you what. I will say that having a felony conviction in the United States is very difficult. You know, we're not necessarily a society of forgiveness. And speaking about the hard path, there's really almost no harder path than having a conviction. I had gotten a job when I got out, and then Corona came and that job went away. And it took me 163 applications to find another job. And I was getting rejected for jobs $12 an hour, $15 an hour. So it's very humbling when you do that. And you really do have to have your self-esteem in check. And, you know, I started looking at these as obstacles to overcome. They never got me down. Corona did. It's horrible and it's tragic. But me personally, I never let it get me down. I let it continue to thrive through it and work hard through it. And just every rejection just fueled the fire for the next application and just trying to be a little bit better.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that goes back to part of owning your own power, right? It's like, okay, so what choice do I have it in this moment? You said something earlier. You said, what was it? Having the courage to lift the veil of who Mark really is. That's a powerful metaphor. Where did you find the courage to finally do it, to lift that veil?
It was in the little things every day that I was doing while incarcerated. It was, you know, like I said earlier, when I was learning about all this personal development, you know, I would do things. I would get all charged up for a couple of days. You know, I was learning emotional freedom techniques, you know, tapping, right? And I was doing the tap and I would do the tapping. And then after 3 or 4 days, I would stop doing it, you know? And it's so while incarcerated, the fact that I was doing these gratitude walks, whether it was raining, whether it was snowing, whether it was beautiful weather, it didn't matter. I was doing them on a consistent basis. So I started building this base of continuing to follow what I thought was the right path. And I guess there also is a lot of power in charting your own waters, you know, not seeking out gurus to try to be your best self, you know, to actually maybe looking for that advice along the way through books or whatever. But when you're in prison, you don't have a lot of resources. So, you know, all of that self-esteem and all of that authenticity and then all of that responsibility, it allowed me to be who I was. And really the third thing that I like to talk about is acceptance. You know, acceptance for people and events and acceptance for my mistakes and for my good things. And I think that's also a big part of this journey. I mean, I can't imagine how many hours of my life I wasted trying to change other people who were never going to change, right? Instead of just accepting them for who they are or try to change events that I had no control over. Like how many times would you get angry getting stopped at a red light because you were late? Right. You can't control the red light. You know, it's not under your power. By the way, now I love red lights because it means I'm not in prison.
Yeah. That's right.
If my hamburger comes out medium well instead of medium rare, I don't really care. It's still better than the ones I had in prison. So it's a very interesting perspective. So
it does kind of shift your perspective a little bit.
It will shift your perspective big time.
Yeah.
So starting to build that base through lots of little successes. And, you know, I think another thing with lower self-esteem is you're always looking for that home run. You know, you're always, especially when you're on it, when you're in a hedge fund and you know that you're bleeding assets and you're doing all these things, you know, you're looking for that one big trade that's going to get you out of it, you know? And now I, you know, a lot of my agenda now is small, consistent steps in the right direction every day.
Yeah. I know we were talking about that before we started recording, the small, consistent actions. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. And every time whatever you were just saying there about the small steps, and looking for the home run. That's what triggered it. Cause then I started thinking about baseball. You know, it's the difference, like going up to the plate thinking, you know, playing small ball, right? Mm-hmm. We need a hit. We need a walk. We get hit by a pitch, whatever you need to do to get on base, versus always thinking, I have to hit a grand slam. I have to hit a home run.
Yeah.
Hit the base hit. You know, the base hits consistently. That's what wins games.
And when you have a lineup with everything in it, right? That's the best of all. When you have your guys who are bunting to get on, and then you have your home run hitters.
Sluggers.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, going back to sort of the lifting the veil comment, I also want to really tell everybody that when you are authentic, there is no better feeling. Like, you know, I sleep so well. Yeah. I look in the mirror and I really love who I see. I really am excited about how things have unfolded. I never could have imagined it. And, you know, Bobby, we talked about meeting on LinkedIn, and I'm just putting up all this stuff that is, it's just raw. And it's just about my life. And, you know, I will, for full disclosure, I'm just starting to go onto Facebook and say some of these stories. And that's because I have a family and I have kids. And, you know, I need to make sure that everything is in line, that I'm not, you know, they've already been scarred enough. So, you know, LinkedIn is more of a business platform. It's a little bit of a different audience. So, but, you know, just to be posting every day. And, you know, I remember the first real post I put on LinkedIn about, like, you know, being incarcerated and how I screwed up and everything like that. There was some real butterflies there, you know, because you wonder who's going to see this and you wonder what's their reaction's going to be. And, you know, I moved back to the same town I lived in when I was doing all of this. And, you know, you run into people and most people are pretty nice about it. And actually, a lot of people are inquisitive. They want to know what it was like. And there's a few people who ignore me, and that's fine. That's their path. But that's part of, again, that's part of this whole concept of accepting events and people for who they are. And I really take pride in doing that. And I looked at Corona and I look at all these other things that other people might look at as setbacks. And I just look at them as obstacles and tests of my skill from the universe, you know, or from God, whatever deity you look at, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And that takes some courage to move back to the exact same town, right? I mean, because you don't know and you don't get to control how other people respond.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I wrote a chapter in the book about leaving Otisville, because you would think that it would be like the happiest day. And it was. I was very excited, but I learned about my release date about a month before it. And, you know, there was a little bit of this anxiety, a little bit of angst in terms of, okay, can I take the lessons I've learned in here and bring them into the real world? You know, as horrible as prison is, you know, there's no bills to pay. There's no kids to drive. There's no groceries to buy. It's a very sterile type of life. And where I was in a camp. So there was really little to no physical danger. It was really more of the emotional of being away from family and knowing that you've hurt people, and events happening outside of you that you can't be a part of. So there was this anxiety level of, did I really learn what I think I learned? Am I really a better person for this experience? Yeah. And obviously I'm happy to say that, yes, the answer is yes, that the lessons that I learned were real. They stuck with me. And throughout all the obstacles that I faced between, you know, it's been about just over 2 years now since I've gotten out. And I'm happy to say that I feel wonderful. And life is not always easy. Life is not always, you know, not always, everything's not perfect in Mark Moskowitz's world, but I feel great. I love myself and I love the message that I'm working to spread.
Yeah. You know, it was funny because I was going to ask you about that. Because I remember when we talked in our pre-interview or prep call, you had shared that, like, as you're getting ready to leave, it's like, oh my goodness, was it just because I was in here? You know, so was there something that you did in particular to, I don't know, cement the learning as you were leaving?
It was, to keep saying it, I just kept going back to basics. I kept talking gratitude every day, you know, and I wasn't trying to find some new magic elixir. I knew what I had. So I think that it was just, again, focus on being authentic, focus on gratitude, focus on the small steps today. Don't worry about a month from now. Don't worry about 5 months from now. Just focus on what you can control today. It's a very present-minded formula, and which, of course, is the best place to be living. You know, and the past is gone. You can't really do anything about that. You can just try to be the best person you are here. So, you know, so that was really what I tried to do. And you know, there were a few guys there that were multiple time offenders. You know, they'd come back. One guy was there three times. One guy was there two. So, you know, like that sticks in your head. And the rate of recidivism in this country is very high. It's, I think within the first 5 years is like 30%. And then between the 5 and 15 years is over 60%.
No way.
So, yeah. So, you know, so the rate of recidivism is high. And that speaks to the fact that we don't really rehabilitate our inmate population. So it's just not getting too far ahead of myself. That was the trap I used to fall into. So now it's just every morning I wake up, I have this really wonderful routine that I go through, and that just gets me going for the day. And at the end, in the evening, I set up my day for the next day. So I'm never really guessing what I have to do. I always know what my schedule looks like, and it's very rigid, but there's a lot of, it's ironic. I find there's a lot of freedom in that rigidity.
Being organized gives you that. It gives you the freedom to, I don't know, be a little bit more creative. Yeah.
You can build that into your schedule. You know, you can build it in.
That's right. You know, and like, as I'm writing, I always leave, like when I'm about to wrap up an episode or something, I make a note of what's next. That way, when I come back, I know exactly where to pick it up. It feels good. And it's exciting, because then when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, this is what I'm going to write about today. Mm-hmm. You know, great. And it just keeps it going. Now, when you, your book, I wanted to talk about that. And it is, I know you have some exciting news about that. Do you want to tell us the name of it? And sure. Then also some of the exciting news.
Thank you. So the name of the book is Within: How I Found My Happy and Authentic Self in Federal Prison. So from the name Within, you can imagine, again, what I spoke to at the beginning of the show is that all of our power comes from within us. And we don't have to look to external material things to bring us joy. And I say caveat that with, I love material external things. There's nothing wrong with having a nice home or a nice car or doing things. It's, for me, I was always doing it for the wrong reasons. I was doing it for those ego-driven, inauthentic reasons. You know, now, and obviously my idea of what's nice things has also dramatically changed as my income level is a bit lower than what it used to be. But I'm probably, not probably, I'm much happier than I've ever been. So the good news is that New Degree Press, a publishing house, has decided to pick up my book, and they've greenlit my book for a spring of 2022 release date. So it was very exciting. It was great to hear that. As I was working with a developmental editor, he once said to me, he goes, and this kind of speaks to the routine of having a schedule. He says, you are just a machine. He's like, you're not doing the most of my class every day or every week, but you're doing it every week. Like every week you're showing me 2,000 or 3,000 words. I have some people that come out of the blocks, they do 5,000 words, and then they don't do any words for the next 2 months. Like, you are just a machine. He's like, and I watch you every day. I see what you're writing. I see what you're posting. Like, and that's the kind of person that they love. So he was really happy. I got my book greenlit, and I'm excited to get that out into press.
I mean, that's super exciting. How much of it is written at this point, would you say?
So October 15th, they gave me a deadline to have what they call their horrible first draft, which is a funny way to look at it, right? It's like they want you to just have a first draft. So that's going to be about 40,000 words. So I'm just about there right now. It's a fully edited first draft. And then it's going to take about 3 or 4 months to clean it up and make it into a second and third draft. And the third draft should be just about the finished product.
You know, Mark, even though I laughed about that, the horrible first draft, in a way, I think that's a great way to frame it, right? Because what gets in a lot of people's way? The desire to be perfect, right? And it's like, oh, I don't have the right words. You're not going to have the right words at first, right? It's a process that you go through, you know, and I think that applies not just in writing, but in our lives sometimes. Like, it's a process, and it's rewriting and revising. So I kind of love that, the horrible first draft.
I love it too. And, you know, I you just reminded me of something. I was following somebody on LinkedIn, and he had written a post about how he wrote every week for he wrote twice a week for 52 weeks, and he had gotten like over 1 million views. And I went back and I looked at like the first 10 posts he wrote, and I looked at the last 20. And the difference in those were so different. And I actually reached out to him. We messaged each other and we chatted about it. And he goes, yes, I look back and I'm almost embarrassed, but I knew that was the process that I had to take, was to go through those ugly first 10, 15, 20 posts. And then at the end, the posts were just really good and informative and add a lot of value. So yeah. Don't be afraid to give it that shot. You know, no, there is no perfection. That is also a low self-esteem excuse. Like, well, mm-hmm. I can't do it until, like, I remember one time I was like spent like $3,000 setting up like a meditation room. Like, who cares? Like, you know what? Like, you know, that bought like this beautiful Buddha statue and 19 candles and this wonderful sound system and all this stuff. And I meditated for like 5 days and then it all went away. So like, you know, everything had to be perfect for me to start meditating. It's silly. Yeah. Sit on a pillow and go, you know,
that's all it is. You know, shut your eyes. Imagine, exactly. You know? But it's something that gets in our way. God, I remember when I first started speaking professionally, it was back in 2001. And someone said at the time, he's a professional speaker, someone I really admired. And he said, look, your first 100 speeches are going to suck. So get them out of the way. And I remember when he said that, I was like, all right, let's get those out of the way. Because everyone's going to get better, but they don't get better unless we start.
That's right. You can't get to speech 10 if you don't do speech 1, right?
That's right. And oh my God, there was one I gave back in 2005. And it was like, it was one of my best speeches up until then. It was videoed. We had, you know, standing ovation, the whole bit. And I recently, like a year ago, I rewatched it for whatever reason. And I was like, oh my God, that was awful. But at the time, it was a really good speech. But now it's like, we get better as we keep practicing, as we keep doing it.
It's so true. And, you know, it's like a lot of my posts are not only about the business world. Like sometimes it's just stay with your passions and keep doing those. And, you know, I think, again, one of the things that happened to me was, I grew up playing golf and I started because of my dad, but ultimately I really loved the game and I got to a nice proficiency at it. And I was teaching my kids and everything, but life had just gotten so hectic. And all three of my kids are good athletes and hockey players and lacrosse players. And, you know, there was no time for dad. So I quit mm-hmm. the game. I gave up what was a real big identity for me. And I gave up a big passion for me. And, you know, as I was thinking about this recently, I'm like, you know, maybe I didn't need to play 3 times a week and maybe I could have at least just gone to the range a couple of times and just kept going. So, you know, keep those passions and don't have this perfection mindset. Have what is now popular as a growth mindset. Have a mindset of learning. And I'm just getting a little bit better at everything every day. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, that's how the progress that we want. The other thing too, and this is what's been trying to pop into my head as you've been talking about different things here. Something that you said triggered this thought about how we sometimes compare ourselves, right? Especially when we're getting started and we compare ourselves to other people who, I heard one podcaster talk about it this way. Like we're comparing ourselves to someone who's in chapter 28 of their story and we're in the introduction of ours. And when we compare ourselves, it's very demotivating.
You know, I love YouTube videos. I love watching videos on YouTube, inspirational, motivational, all that stuff. And, you know, Kobe Bryant was always a big person on YouTube videos and especially since his passing. But, you know, he was always one of those people who said, you don't see me in the gym at 7 a.m. You don't see me in the gym 6 hours later where I've practiced, you know, 200 free throws. You only see me on the court when I'm slam dunking and scoring 40 points. You don't see all that hard work. And, you know, as you know, Bobby, no overnight sensations happened overnight. You know, it's all hard work. It's all effort. And don't compare yourself to others because it's a trap that you will never, ever win. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, the book is called Within because it's all right with inside of yourself. You do not have to look. It's wonderful to get motivation from other people and it's wonderful to have mentors and coaches. But ultimately, you're going to be the one that's going to be the fate of your success.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love this stuff about Kobe Bryant. I was a huge Michael Jordan fan.
Mm-hmm, same thing, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember I saw a quote once by Muhammad Ali because I used to watch boxing with my dad. He always loved boxing. And I remember there's this quote by him, Muhammad Ali about the fight is won away from the lights. Yeah. It's in the gym. It's in the runs that you put in. It's all that kind of stuff. So one thing I wanted to get to too, we were talking about this again before we were pre-recording and before we started recording about self-loathing. Anything you want to say about that?
I have starting to pen a new phrase and that I'm a reformed self-loather and a current self-lover. It's hard to go through life not thinking you're worthy. Mm. You're going to sabotage yourself most of the time. And the longer you delay those sabotages, you know, that's the longer you put off the pain, the harder it is. And, you know, when you love yourself, you just want to run through a wall every day. And you want to make those mistakes and you want to because you know that you can do it. It's this confidence level, you know, that's cellular. you just know that nothing is going to stop you. You know, I quit my job in marketing in July of this year, 2021, because I said, I don't want to chase money anymore. I want to chase my passion and I want to chase my purpose. And I truly believe that I was not put in prison to be punished solely. I was put there for a larger purpose and a larger reason. And I wouldn't be authentic to myself if I didn't put all of my effort and energy into doing this and being the best person that I can be. And if I help one person or 10 people or whatever it is, I'm so much happier for the journey and I'm so much happier to help out.
Yeah. I love that. The reformed self-loather and everything you just said there, right? I mean, it's such a how we feel about ourselves. Well, number one, I think it's how other people see us too. And it just informs so much about what we do and how we show up. So Mark, let me ask you this. If someone's listening and they're like, you know, I want to take the next step and I want to really, I don't know, fall in love with myself, right? However you want to put that.
Sure.
Are there one or two practices that you would recommend for someone?
The first thing is take real stock of where you are in your life. And I'm not a fan of making big changes. You know, I'm not a fan of selling all your assets and going to a mountaintop in Tibet and praying. I am a big fan of staying in the world that you live in, staying with your current job, but just tweaking things a little bit to make yourself feel a little better. Maybe that's having a conversation with your manager and saying, hey, you know, I'm not really feeling fulfilled in this role. Is there something else in the company? Or can I take on some different responsibilities? I mean, you have to think these things through. So taking real stock and being very conscious of your life. You know, one thing I didn't touch on, Bobby, but, you know, another benefit of the prison life is there's no cell phones. Oh. And here we have just so many distractions. There's no cell phones. There's no internet. The email is literally a 3-hour delay both ways. So when you send an email, you're not going to get anything back for 6 hours. So, and there is some really nice things about not having those distractions. It gives you an opportunity to think. You know, when I was really spiraling, life just kind of just kept going. Every day just kept going. And I was not consciously creating my life. I was not thinking about things. So really dig deep into what's making you happy. And maybe what's not making you so happy? Do you need to have a conversation with a relationship that you're in, a spouse or a significant other? Do you need to clean up those types of things? And you'll feel good just for having the conversation. It may not work out the way you want it to, but just having that conversation will make you feel good. And then it worked for me. So I have to say, like, go be grateful for something, you know?
Yeah.
Go really like, but don't just say it, like really feel like I am so grateful. Like, And I'll say right now, Bobby, I'm so grateful that you had me on here. I love being able to talk about my message. And so show gratitude and live life with a purpose. And if you have a passion on the side, maybe it's a little side hustle that you do. If you love art and you want to just post pictures on Instagram of art, then go do that. You know, but live a life that's exciting and fun. And you will see your self-esteem rise just by doing those things. You don't have to think about it. It's unconscious. It just happens over time.
Yeah. Well, and I think something really important there, Mark, is that our self-esteem, just by us thinking about it, it's by the actions, the things that make us feel good and where we feel like we're contributing. I love that. And the thing about the gratitude when you're talking, it's not a checkbox. Oh, was I grateful today? You know, it's actually being grateful. And I had a friend of mine, he was on a podcast recently and he was talking, and he's a 9/11 survivor and he was, you know, in the towers. And he said, you know, just even if it's just being grateful for the lungs, that the air that you have in your lungs, but find something. I mean, there's take a walk outside, you know? So, and I have to say this, when you said just having the conversation, even if it doesn't turn out the way you want it to, just having the conversation will make you feel better. I love that. Why will just having the conversation make you feel better?
First, because you took power. You thought it through. You made a decision that what you needed to have your life be better. And that might be, hey, we need to do date night once a week. I'm feeling like we're not getting enough time together. The kids are dominating our lives, or you talk to your manager. So you thought it through. You went through a process, and going through the process is everything. You know, it is everything. That is what our lives are. It's processes. It's systems in place. You know, goals are wonderful, but it's systems that get us to our goals.
Yeah.
So you thought it through, and then you had the courage to go talk to that person. That is a big thing. That's like, I'm like showing you like, hey, you know what? I'm really invested in this relationship, you know, and I would love it if we could figure out how to X, Y, and Z, you know?
Yeah.
So there is this really wonderful feeling about that. I remember as my life was spiraling and as I was going deeper into this being alone, I was trusting of nobody. I was rushing home to make sure that the mail wouldn't come or whatever, like, you know, like stupid, like I was hiding from everything, you know? So being out there and being able to talk to the people that you most trust and care about and that care about you. And yeah, the hard conversations are not easy to have, but they are the most fulfilling. And if you make your desires known and you do it consistently and you're still not getting anywhere, then you have to really seriously think about what that relationship is going to look like for you. You know, I felt like I tried with my ex to heal things before all of this happened to me. But I also feel like maybe I could have tried harder. I don't know. Maybe I could have done something else. You know, it's maybe I didn't exhaust all of my resources before it fell apart. So I think that's really the key.
I think it's really hard to be truly authentic if we're harboring something and we're not discussing it. And it's not like we have to discuss it in, you know, like a mean way, but showing up with compassion and dignity for both parties. You know, if we're just hoping or dropping hints that maybe the other person will catch on to what we want, it's not going to get us to where we want to go. It's not authentic.
Bobby, that's a great point, by the way, like on coming there with the right mindset, you know, coming there with this attitude of not anger and not confrontation, but with appreciation and with wanting to make things better, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really, the attitude is so important how you come to that conversation.
Yeah. Very quickly, I had my mind blown back in when I was in grad school. We talked about the notion that everything is co-created, you know? So if my husband and I, if we have a fight, it's not all his fault and it's not all my fault. Almost always. And I can't even think of an example, when we're talking about it, how did we each contribute? And if you come to the table that way, it's just such a better place.
It's such a healthy way to start a relationship too. You know, it's so powerful. It's really, I'm glad we got to this point of the conversation. It's great.
Yeah. Well, this has been great, Mark. If people want to learn more about you, if they want to connect about, you know, learn about your services, the book, all that kind of good stuff, what is the best way for them to do that?
Right now, the best thing is really probably LinkedIn. My LinkedIn profile is out there and feel free to reach out. And also my website is markjmoskowitz.com. And on Instagram also, Mark J. Moskowitz. And that's the best way.
Cool. And I'll put those in the show notes. Yeah, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for coming on, for sharing your story and what you've learned by just living your story.
Bobby, thank you. You're very welcome. It's really been a treat for me.
I hope that you enjoyed that interview, and I really wish that you could have seen it, because when Mark is talking, he just radiates happiness. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, it's the simple things done consistently that will get you to your goal. We often think that we have to hit a home run or we have to find that mystical, magical silver bullet. No. Achieving what we desire is really just about doing the right things and doing them consistently. Number two, I loved it when Mark spoke of lifting the veil of who Mark really is. I don't know if there is a more powerful thing that we can do than to just be ourselves. And I think it's powerful not only for ourselves, but for those around us. One of the best compliments that I've ever received from my sister, Kathy, was something that she said to me back in 2010. She said, "I'm really grateful that you have shown up authentically in our family because it allowed all of us to do the same. We don't have to pretend." And that gets to what I call the hidden gift of being authentic. Being authentic is not something we do for selfish reasons, because it gives others permission and the courage to be true to themselves. And that's what the world needs more of. And finally, number three, Mark was completely right when he said that even if it doesn't turn out the way you want it to, just having the conversation will make you feel better. That is spot on. I've been in that situation before, and having the conversation does make you feel better. I remember years ago when we lived in Portland, I had a friend, at least I thought she was a friend, who was, you know, let's just say, stepping on my toes. She started being a little bit disrespectful and, it was bothering me. And at first I thought, well, maybe she's just going through a bad spell or a bad patch and it's going to pass. Well, it didn't. And so I knew I was going to have to talk to her about it because obviously you can't allow that to continue. And I was nervous about it. This was someone that I really liked. And I said to Rick, I said, I know that I need to talk to her about this. And I'm nervous because I don't know how she'll take it. And I suspect that she's not going to take it well. And he replied, when you take the authentic action, you get the result that is right for you. I wrote that bit of wisdom down and I've carried it around with me since then. There is so much power and so much truth in that. Here it is again. This is what Rick said. When you take the authentic action, you get the result that is right for you. To me, that means I don't control the outcome. I control myself and I control my actions. I hope that these interviews are providing you with inspiration, hope, and practical insights that are helping you to thrive no matter what life throws in your way. If you have ever gotten any value from them, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple as it helps us spread the message. Also, be sure to check out our Monday edition of the podcast called Rise and Thrive. They are short segments meant to fuel you, your week, and your life. This week, I thought I'd leave you with this thought from the interview. How can you implement your own version of a gratitude walk in your life?